Imagine trying to find a specific tiny treasure chest that's buried somewhere in this infinitely large, incredibly rigid grid.
Right, like a massive checkerboard.
Exactly. And you have to check every single coordinate box one by one. You know, does this box hold the treasure? No.
Right.
Move to the next. Does this one? No.
It's exhausting just thinking about it.
Right. But that tedious, blocky trial and error, that is essentially what computers are doing right now when they try to break the massive prime numbers that secure, well, your bank accounts and your entire digital life.
Yes, the classic brute force approach.
Yeah. But what if you could magically melt that rigid grid down? Like, what if you could turn that infinite checkerboard into this smooth, continuous, sloping valley where gravity just naturally pulls a marble directly into the treasure chest?
I mean, that is a profound shift in perspective. You're
Yeah.
talking about moving an incredibly stubborn problem out of the discrete, blocky world of integer math and dragging it into the smooth, flowing world of calculus.
Which is wild.
It really is. It's a completely different way of seeing the universe of numbers.
And that's exactly what our deep dive is about today. We are jumping into a fascinating paper titled The Collapse of the Gap.
A great title, by the way.
So good. And the authors have essentially built a continuous gradient descent framework for integer factorization. We are going to trace this process step by step for you today.
From the loss function all the way down to the final collapse.
Exactly. We'll look at how they redefine the target to build this smooth mathematical landscape and how they navigate a terrain that is just absolutely covered in false bottoms and mathematical singularities.
And ultimately, we'll explain the connection between that gradient flow and the probabilistic CCT method. Basically, how they bridge the gap between a single marble rolling down a hill and a probability cloud condensing into a single answer.
So to understand the magnitude of what this paper is proposing, I think we have to look at the traditional approach first, right?
Yeah, definitely. So usually, if you are handed a massive number, let's just call it C, and you know it's a semi-prime, meaning it is the product of exactly two prime numbers, P and Q.
Right, the hidden keys.
Exactly. Your immediate instinct is to start hunting for P and Q. You try dividing by 3, by 5, by 7, and so on.
You are just banging your head against a wall of whole numbers, hoping to find those exact two pieces.
But this method, it discards that instinct entirely. Instead of hunting for the hidden primes themselves, the algorithm targets the distance between them.
The gap.
Yes, the gap. They call this gap D. So D is really just the larger prime, Q, minus the smaller prime, P.
Okay, so by shifting the focus to the empty space between the factors, rather than the factors themselves, the algebra suddenly opens up. It allows us to build that smooth valley we mentioned earlier.
Precisely.
Okay, let's unpack this setup a bit. We have our massive semi-prime number, C, and we have this unknown gap, D, between our two mystery primes. The paper lays out a core mathematical requirement to make this work.
Right, the baseline condition.
Yeah. It states that D squared plus four times our big number C has to equal a perfect square. Let's just call that perfect square S squared.
And if you think about what those variables actually represent structurally, if D is the difference between our two hidden primes, this new variable S is actually their sum.
Wait, really? The sum of the two primes?
Yeah, it boils down to pure, elegant geometry. If you take the square of the difference between two numbers and you add four times their product, you mathematically end up with the square of their sum.
Oh, wow.
So if you can just find the sum, which is S, you have cracked the entire puzzle. Because once you know how far apart two numbers are and what they add up to, finding the numbers themselves is trivial arithmetic.
So you don't have to guess primes anymore at all. You just take the sum of the difference, add them together, divide by two, and boom, you have your prime factors.
That's it.
The paper even gives the specific formulas, like the smaller prime P is S minus D over 2, and the larger prime Q is S plus D over 2. I mean, it's like having a master key.
It is, but the challenge, of course, is that you still have to find that integer s in the first place.
Right. Catch is always in the details.
Always. And that is the exact moment we leave the realm of discrete math and enter the continuous landscape of optimization. To do this, the authors create a loss function.
And for anyone who maybe isn't super familiar, in machine learning, a loss function is simply a way of measuring how wrong your current guess is. The ultimate goal is to get your loss down to zero.
Exactly. And the loss function they chose for this is fascinating. It's the sine squared of pi times the square root of d squared plus 4c.
Which I know that sounds like a massive mouthful of trigonometry,
It really does.
but visually, it's actually incredibly intuitive.
Yeah, consider how a standard sine wave behaves. It is a continuous, undulating curve that goes up and down, crossing the zero axis at regular, predictable intervals.
Like a heartbeat monitor, almost.
Kind of, yeah. And specifically, the sine of pi times any whole number, any integer at all, will always be exactly zero.
Ah, so if s, which is that square root part of the equation, if s happens to be a perfect whole integer, the sine function bottoms out perfectly. The loss hits zero.
You've got it. And by squaring that entire sine function, the authors guarantee that the curve can never dip into negative territory. It bottoms out at zero and immediately curves back up.
So finding a whole number solution to our factorization problem isn't a yes or no guessing game anymore. It is simply a matter of finding the absolute lowest valley on this continuous undulating curve.
Exactly.
It actually reminds me of tuning in old school analog radio. Finding the prime factors is like trying to find the perfect, crystal clear, static-free frequency.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, the loss function we just described is the static. When you are turning the dial and the static hits absolute zero, you know you've landed on the exact right integer station. You've hit the valley.
They have successfully converted a discrete puzzle into a measurable terrain. We now have a topographical map, and we can use the tools of calculus to literally follow the slope of the static downward.
Which brings us to the next phase of the process.
Right.
We have our map, we have our continuous slope, now we need to traverse it. The paper introduces gradient descent, which is basically dropping a marble onto this curve and letting gravity pull it down to the lowest point. But looking at Proposition 2 in the text, this landscape is definitely not a simple, clean bowl.
Far from it. It is highly non-convex. The paper describes the loss landscape as a smooth curve, but it is covered in a countable infinity of local minima.
Which are essentially false valleys.
Right. Because of the repeating geometry of the sine squared curve, the gradient, you know, the steepness of the hill naturally flattens out to zero at the peaks of the hills, but also at the bottoms of these false valleys.
Okay, so it gets flat.
Yeah. Mathematically, the gradient vanishes whenever the sine of 2 pi is x equals 0.
And the text points out that these false valleys occur specifically when s is a half integer, so numbers like 5.5 or 100.5 or 1,000,000.5.
Yes.
If s lands on a half integer, the slope flattens out, the marble stops rolling, but the loss isn't 0. It's just a wrong answer.
The marble rolls down, but it gets caught in a trap where the math tells it to stop moving, even though it hasn't found the true integer. The global minima, the only correct answers, are the true whole numbers.
Wait, hold on. Let me make sure I'm picturing this right, because this feels like a massive flaw in the method.
Okay, lay it out.
If this smooth valley is actually covered in an infinite series of half-integer potholes, how does the marble ever reach the bottom? If I just drop a marble randomly onto the slope, it's going to slide down and get stuck in the very first pothole it hits. It seems like it would never reach the actual prime factor.
And that is a completely valid critique, but it's also the precise hurdle the continuous gradient flow ODE, the ordinary differential equation, is designed to overcome.
Okay, so how does it work?
The ODE is the mathematical engine that dynamically moves our gap toward the nearest zero of the loss function. When the marble manages to get close enough to a true integer S, the loss doesn't just decrease, it decreases exponentially fast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it creates what the paper calls an attractor.
Like a gravitational pull.
Exactly. It is a mathematical singularity in the landscape. Once you cross the threshold of that specific true basin, the pull is so overwhelmingly strong that the marble rockets to the absolute bottom.
So you just have to get close enough.
Right. It only experiences that exponential pull if you start close enough to avoid the infinite half-integer potholes lining the walls of the valley.
So how do they actually ensure the marble avoids the traps in the first place? Algorithm 1 in the paper, the CCT gradient factorization, outlines their workaround. They use random restarts.
Yes. For a 100-digit semi-prime number, the algorithm might utilize somewhere between 20 to 50 restarts. It's a practical approach of just picking the marble up and dropping it in a new spot.
But they aren't just dropping it blindly, right? I mean, that would take forever.
Far from it. They utilize an initial variance that's informed by the prime number theorem. Based on the sheer size of the number C, they can calculate a rough neighborhood of where the gap is statistically likely to exist. So they drop a targeted spread of marbles across different spots. The objective is simply to drop just one of those marbles inside the true basin of attraction.
And the moment one hits that massive true crater, the exponential speed of the gradient descent takes over, and the equation collapses to the answer almost instantly.
That word collapse is right in the title of the paper for a reason, and it marks a major pivot in the text where things get really mind-bending.
Yeah, this is where we need to talk about the CCT method, because we've been talking about dropping a single marble down a hill, which is a very classical, deterministic, physics-based way of viewing the math.
Right.
But the paper argues that this gradient flow is actually unifying that deterministic view with a completely different probabilistic framework.
This is where we encounter the CCT framework, which stands for Collapse Convergence Threshold. Mm. To understand how these two languages of math describe the same event, we really have to zoom out from our single marble and look at the entire space of probability distributions.
So instead of a single point on a map, we are looking at a cloud.
A mathematical prior. In the discrete CCT framework, our gap begins as a probability distribution representing all the possible values the gap could take. Now, instead of calculating the physical slope of a hill for a single marble, the CCT iteration is designed to minimize something called free energy.
Free energy? I gotta say, that sounds like something straight out of thermodynamics.
The parallel is very intentional. In a physical system, minimizing free energy is about a system trying to find its most stable, settled state.
Okay.
In this mathematical context, minimizing free energy means reducing the uncertainty about where the true gap actually is. As the algorithm iterates, a specific parameter called variance, represented by the Greek letter sigma, is forced downward towards zero. The paper refers to this cooling process as deterministic annealing.
So imagine you are standing over this bumpy, infinitely large mathematical landscape, but instead of dropping a solid marble, you blanket the entire area with a thick, heavy layer of fog.
Yes, the fog is the probability distribution.
Right. It covers the high peaks, it sinks into the half-integer potholes, it just covers everything. But as the algorithm runs, as that free energy drops and the system cools, the fog begins to rapidly shrink.
It condenses. Because those half-integer potholes are only local minima, they don't represent the ultimate stable state. So as the mathematical temperature drops, the fog literally boils out of those shallow traps.
It pulls away from the peaks.
Exactly. Constantly shrinking and condensing toward the strongest gravitational pull until all of that sweeping fog forms into a single, incredibly dense drop of water directly over the true integer singularity.
And the paper uses a very specific term for that final single drop of water. Mathematically, it becomes a Dirac cone.
It is the moment the probability cloud entirely collapses into a point mass. A Dirac cone represents a massive, infinitely sharp spike of probability centered exactly at the integer S with zero probability everywhere else.
It's like watching a quantum wave function collapse the moment you measure it. It's beautiful.
And it proves that the discrete probabilistic iteration of the CCT framework is, in reality, the exact same mechanism as the continuous gradient descent of the ODE.
So they really are the same thing.
Yeah, the deterministic annealing of your fog and the physical rolling of the marble are just two sides of the same mathematical coin. They are describing the identical underlying geometry of prime numbers.
I mean, unifying two distinct mathematical dialects into a single functioning truth is incredibly cool. But I do want to pull us out of the theoretical fog for a second and step into the harsh light of the real world.
Okay, let's do it.
We've mapped the potholes. We've watched the probability condense into a singularity. But practically speaking, what happens when we unleash this gradient descent outside of a controlled academic paper? Specifically, what happens when we point it at the cryptographic systems that run our world, like RSA?
That is the ultimate stress test, isn't it? RSA encryption, which secures virtually all of our digital communication and banking, relies entirely on the assumption that factoring large semi-primes is computationally unfeasible.
It banks on that blocky, rigid grid being far too vast to search by brute force.
Exactly.
And yet the numerical experiments in section 7 of the paper show that this new continuous method achieves an exponential speedup compared to classical methods, like Fermat's factorization.
It does.
So the obvious question you probably have is, does this mean our bank accounts are currently vulnerable? Are malicious actors like rolling marbles down calculus hills to steal our passwords right now?
No, not exactly. While it is a brilliant theoretical breakthrough, we aren't facing an immediate cryptographic apocalypse today. Section 8 of the paper details exactly why standard RSA implementation is currently safe from this specific gradient flow approach.
Okay, phew. Let's break down the mechanics of why we are safe.
It fundamentally comes down to the width of that basin of attraction we discussed earlier, the size of the crater that catches our randomly dropped marbles. The paper demonstrates that the radius of this attraction basin scales according to a very specific mathematical ratio,
which is S divided by D. So let's look closely at that ratio. S is the sum of our primes, and D is the gap between them. What happens when the two prime numbers, P and Q, are extremely close together in value?
Well, if the prime factors are nearly identical, the gap between them, D, is incredibly small.
And in fractions, dividing any number by a tiny denominator yields a massive result.
Precisely the issue. For balanced or close to square semi-primes, where the gap is small, the basin of attraction becomes enormous. It expands from a pothole into a massive, unavoidable canyon.
So if you drop a marble anywhere in the general vicinity, it gets caught in the pole.
Yes. For those specific, tightly packed numbers, the method collapses to the answer almost instantly. It is breathtakingly efficient. But the inverse is also true. If the prime factors are highly unbalanced, meaning one prime is massive and the other is relatively small, the gap D becomes enormous.
So when your denominator is huge, the resulting fraction shrinks.
Exactly. The basin of attraction shrinks linearly as the gap widens. It transforms from a canyon into a tiny, narrow needle hidden in a haystack of half-integer potholes.
So the method degrades.
Significantly. The authors note that for highly unbalanced primes, the basin becomes so narrow that you would require an absurd number of random restarts just to blindly land inside it.
Right.
At that point, the efficiency drops so much that you might as well revert to the old, slow, classical search methods.
Okay, tying this directly back to RSA cryptography.
Yeah.
How does this ratio interact with the way secure keys are actually generated?
Well, standard cryptographic practice was specifically designed to avoid close prime vulnerabilities long before this paper was published. When generating RSA keys, the primes P and Q are selected independently and intentionally forced to have a massive gap between them.
They are deliberately unbalanced.
Right. By ensuring the gap is vast, the RSA standard inherently forces the basin of attraction for this gradient flow to be unimaginably microscopic.
So our data is safe, because the security standard essentially manipulates the topographical map.
Yep.
It ensures the true answer is buried at the bottom of an impossibly narrow pothole that our marble will never just randomly fall into.
The current defenses hold. However, I think it would be a mistake to dismiss these findings simply because they don't shatter RSA today. The theoretical insight here is monumental.
It really is.
It provides an entirely new geometrical lens for analyzing the weaknesses of factorizations. It proves mathematically that factoring isn't just about raw computational division. It is about understanding the actual physical terrain of the numbers.
It completely changes the battlefield.
If a future mathematician discovers a way to warp that terrain even further, perhaps finding a way to widen the basin for unbalanced primes, or developing an algorithm that can intelligently predict where to drop the marbles instead of using random restarts, I mean, that is where the true frontier of this mathematics lies.
It is a phenomenal shift in how we approach one of the oldest mysteries in math. I mean, we started this deep dive looking at what seemed like a permanently rigid problem, dividing a large number into its prime pieces. We saw that by simply shifting our focus away from the numbers themselves and analyzing the gap between them, we could construct this brilliant, undulating, sine-squared landscape.
And then we observed a continuous gradient flow navigating a countable infinity of false traps, guided by the mathematics of differential equations.
We watched a thick fog of probabilistic uncertainty undergo deterministic annealing, condensing and collapsing into a single, sharp mathematical singularity, literally unifying classical dynamics with probability theory. And finally, we stress-tested this beautiful, flowing mathematical valley against the harsh, discrete reality of modern cryptography.
It highlights a profound, universal truth about problem-solving, honestly. Sometimes the most effective way to solve a seemingly impenetrable, rigid problem isn't to just build a bigger computer or swing a heavier hammer.
It's to fundamentally change the environment the problem lives in. You take the impenetrable brick wall and you just melt it down into a navigable landscape. And that actually leaves us with a final thought to chew on.
Oh, lay it on us.
If the brightest mathematical minds can take the absolute bedrock of discrete mathematics, prime factorization, and successfully transform it into a smooth, continuous terrain that we can simply roll down to find the answer, what other seemingly binary yes or no problems in our daily lives, our societies, or our careers are just waiting for the right loss function?
Wow.
What seemingly impossible brick walls are you banging your head against right now that might suddenly become effortlessly solvable if you just figured out how to turn them into a slide?
A truly fascinating question to end on.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.